time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Yorgo Archidis, who is the director of a new short film and made the documentary circuit, festival circuit rounds over the last year or so here. We actually had dinner last year, talk about the movie and what you were doing with it. And it is one of my favorite little short documentaries that I've seen in some time, and just hit all the nostalgia pleasure centers in my brain, which is great, but also made me think about the state of the world and what we're doing. Yorgo, thank you for being on the show today to talk Troll.
Thank you very much, Sonny. I'm very excited to talk about it.
So I want to just set things up very briefly here. The documentary is about a very strange moment in the history of MTV, Total Request Live, the music industry, et cetera, et cetera, where the internet came together possibly for the first time to play a prank on all of the straights out there, all the squares, all the stiffs. What is your documentary about? Tell us what happens in Troll.
So Troll is about a online troll campaign that happened via chain letter in 1999, where online message boards started circulating and matriculating around the internet, a chain letter that implored people to vote for a New Kids on the Block music video, Hangin' Tough, to be on the Total Request live countdown, to one, just kind of thumb their nose at authority, and two, to see if TRL's voting process was legit or not. And it wasn't the first ever attempt at this, but it was the first ever like successful, hey, we did this thing and the institution relented. I can talk about like a year prior, there was an attempt to get Hank the Angry Drunk Dwarf from Howard Stern. I don't know if you guys remember Howard Stern, 1998 sure. or whatever. But Howard
different
Stern,
time.
Who, yeah, definitely different time, different Howard. And he said, hey, there's an online voting portion for People's Most Beautiful Man Alive, Sexiest Man Alive. And so he told all of his audience to vote for Hank the Angry Drunk Dwarf. He ends up winning by 17 times as many votes as the actual winner, Leonardo DiCaprio. Leonardo DiCaprio was actually third. Second was Ric Flair, and then Hank the Angry Drunk Dwarf. But people said, absolutely not. We're not doing this. We'll give you a small little web blurb or whatever, but we're putting Leo on the thing. So that was a fail. And when I was doing research, I found people being like, we couldn't do it with Hank, but we can do it with this. And so people were really just trying to, I don't know, I just screw with TRL, and there's a rite of passage that generations that are older hate the MTV that exists to them that time. And yeah, what I found out about TRL's voting process made it very interesting to choose this path.
And you, so we should remind folks what TRL is. I'm never 100% sure what the age range of this audience is. If you're my age, TRL, very important. If you are, if you were born in 1980 to 89 or so, TRL, very, very important, formative TV show on MTV. What was Total Request Live, aka TRL?
TRL, Total Request Live, was a live daily music video countdown where they would implore their audience to vote, whether it be by phone calls or by online emails or whatever. And they would break down the top 10 videos of the day. It was hosted by Carson Daly mostly. This episode was hosted by Ananda Lewis and Dave Holmes, who are both in the documentary. And it grew very quickly to becoming like a touch point of culture. Like it was a phenomenon for a very long, for like, I would say like 4 or 5 years, it was legitimately could drive culture. And most of the artists that you know that are big pop legends, whether it be like Britney Spears, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, they all really broke through TRL, and they would generally be the first or second video every single day.
Yeah, it's funny because, again, watching this documentary with my wife, who was a daily TRL viewer. I was not really a TRL viewer because I liked the old, I was like an old soul even then. I liked to, you know, the Springsteen and Zeppelin, whatever. So I was not into, I was not that into TRL, but I was aware of it and, you know, would watch it occasionally. And the revelations in your documentary were heartbreaking, heartbreaking to her, heartbreaking to a lesser extent to me, but it really kind of, you know, it removed some of the mystery and the majesty of TRL from our eyes. What did you learn when you were talking to the execs who were in charge of Total Request Live at this time?
I was very curious about like what the voting process was, because I wanted to know how many votes it would take to actually do this. How did they pull this off? And it seemed like it was more of a trying to figure it out through guesstimation kind of thing, where they would definitely weight phone votes a lot more as opposed to online votes. And also would just, I mean, there's a, we have Kevin Hershey in it, who was a person who worked at TRL, and he talked about the daily voting thing of there were incentives to put other artists earlier in the countdown. Because obviously, if you're number one for an entire week, no matter who you are, especially if you're like a 13, 14, 15-year-old impressionable person who's looking for new music, they're going to be like, oh, this must be the best. I must start listening to POD a lot or whatever, or 98 Degrees or whatever band that was. It was a little bit interesting to find out where they decided to put the New Kids on the Block music video once it started to really, really snowball, because it became an interesting ultimatum of like, do you let the trolls win or do you risk delegitimizing the democracy of your countdown? Because it was public how big New Kids on the Block were dominating that day. It said like there was like a online poll. And it was dominating at like 60% or something, but it was other. So they did have a little bit of plausible deniability, but it was a really, really, it was a sticky situation that they had to get out of.
And it is funny because the hearing like Kevin Hershey, for instance, talk about the numbers with like big scare quotes. Like in my notes, I have like 3 sets of scare quotes around numbers just because it's so kind of sarcastic there. And MTV is an enormous still, but at the time in particular was an enormous tastemaker, had responsibilities beyond, you know, satisfying the whims of the crowd on any given day, trying to juggle the, you know, well, what's the label going to say? What are the managers going to say? Is like, it's just a fascinating little insight into what was going on.
Yeah, and usually people aren't that transparent about it. And when Kevin did that, I was like, oh, wow, how about that? Because I shot all this like during COVID, so everybody was kind of in the, you know, who gives a shit kind of a vibe. And I think, like, I couldn't figure out how to put it in the documentary, but the most interesting thing that I found out about it was that they would do this, I call it, like, cultural gerrymandering, where they would, like, find out that it's like, hey, in Texas, not that many people are watching us. So how can we get Texas? And so they would put somebody like Jessica Simpson, who's from Texas, as an option on the phone votes. And there was only a limited amount of things because of how many numbers there are to actually vote for. So they would kind of just kind of go, let's try to see what they could do. There was also things that they would just want to champion. I don't know if it was like necessarily an agency thing or if they just liked the music. I think a lot of people were just like, hey, we really like Orgy Blue Monday or whatever. But Alicia Keys, Fallen, that her like breakout hit was something that they really wanted to champion, which I mean, it's good. She was, that was a tremendous song, and it's a classic.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's one of those things that was like kind of like a, most people assumed it, but then when you hear people actually say, yeah, that we were kind of not necessarily cooking the books, but really leaning on the scale. It's very fascinating.
Well, what has the response been like for you taking this movie around and showing it again to folks about, you know, my age, little younger, little older, to these revelations? Because again, when I think my wife was legitimately crestfallen a little bit when she was like, so it didn't matter if I called or hit the vote button on yeah. the internet. She was, how do people respond to the movie?
I would say that her vote did count, cause they just kind of like looked at piles and then did whatever. But, like, it wasn't like they were going to ever just take something that nobody was interested in and throw it at number one. But, the response has been, overwhelmingly positive, I would say. It's been very cool to see the kind of people that resonate in it, because it's not really like all about TRL. There's a lot of TRL in there, but it's also a lot of turn of the century internet aesthetics and a lot of different like things that we used to use, like AOL chat rooms and AIM and all that kind of stuff. And what I've learned is that when I was going around, is that the cutoff was 31 years old. Is that if you're over 31 years old, you understand TRL, you get it. Because it went off the air in like 2008, but it wasn't like necessarily mm-hmm. like popping into after 2006 or so. And under 31, if anybody likes it, I feel an immense amount of happiness because they actually understood it. And where it wasn't just all this emotional nostalgia thing, which you get a lot in the movie from like the sounds and the stuff, you know. Like yeah. the you've got mail, like that kind of stuff, yeah. you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of again, you mentioned the look of the thing, the you know, typing in questions to askjeeves.com and you know, that's, which is how we used to have to ask a fake internet butler what things meant instead of just typing random words into Google so the AI could tell us what they meant.
I mean, I tried Ask Jeeves a million times, never worked. It was awful, and I understand why it doesn't work. And then Google just came in and dominated. But the image of Jeeves is still a thing that resonates with people, I think, because there was a lot of commercials. Yeah.
Well, and it is funny too, because it's a reminder of a time where nobody really understood what the internet was or how it worked. So you were like, "Well, I want to find out information. I need to ask a question."
Yeah,
I'm gonna ask this butler. I'm gonna ask Jeeves, and he'll tell me. He'll tell me what the right answer is.
And he would
funny.
We would call it now with AI. He would do a hallucination.
Yes.
Another square quotes hallucination, and just give you the wrong answer and make it seem like you didn't even understand.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the interviews here, because you do have again, this is there's a lot of. There's a lot of interesting information in here about the background of TRL and how the process worked and kind of, you know, but there are also these great interviews with folks who were actually involved in the process, that folks will recognize, people like Dave Holmes and Ananda Lewis. What were their memories of this like? Because that has to be one of the weirdest professional days of Dave Holmes's career.
Yeah. And I it was all very murky to remember it. And I think about this. Did you ever see the thing where the Back to the Future writer gets questioned about why his parents don't remember Marty when they're older? It's like a plot hole that people think.
Yeah.
So like the thing is that Marty goes and hangs out with his parents. And then when they grow older, why would they not recognize Marty? And he says, well, this was like two nights. Like 50 years ago or like 30 years ago, whatever. You right now definitely had a sleepover with somebody for two nights and you do not remember anything about it. And I think of that the exact same way as like live television, where it's like in one ear, out the other. The fact that I could find anybody 20 years afterwards to even talk in any kind of detail about it was very, very exciting to me. Ananda was a little bit murky on it, kind of maybe. Dave was a little bit more like, I remember the essence of what was going on, but I wasn't like part of the decision making. And there was a million different interviews that I did like on background to get to talk to all these people that got me to that level. I just didn't want to do a whole bunch of Zoom interviews because it would have looked bad. And they live everywhere and it was COVID.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it is interesting because there's this very funny moment in the documentary where Dave Holmes is announcing that New Kids on the Block is the number two song on Total Request Live this day. And the audience, it's a mix between like confusion and anger and disgust at what they have been subjected to in the studio. And I can only imagine, look, I'm not a stand-up comedian. I don't do a lot of live performances, but I can only imagine that is the look you get in your nightmares when you are thinking about live performance. What was his memory of that?
Well, the what's interesting is I remember watching that specific episode. That's like how the whole thing came about. And I was 9 years old. And they were teasing, and I went back and looked, and I think he teases this special Can't Believe It premiere like 5 or 6 times in that episode. It's like, hey, keep your heads tuned in. Hey, keep doing it. And I was very excited, and I would assume everybody else. And I was thinking, oh, my Elvis is still alive. He made a music video. It's Tupac's last video. It's Michael Jackson has something. And I was really excited. And then it came out that it was just a 10-year-old music video that I was not familiar with. And I had that exact same reaction of like, ah. Because the way that they sold it was that it was going to be incredible. Like it was going to be something you were just going to get your go nuts. And while it was very surprising, I'm sure, to a lot of people, it wasn't like necessarily brand new and fresh and like some kind of magic, you know?
Yeah. All right. Again, there are all sorts of great interviews here. You talked to one of the New Kids on the Block. Mm-hmm. You talk to Dave Holmes and Ana Lewis. You talk to folks on background. I don't want to spoil any more of it. They should go to your website, trolldoc.com, to check it out. And I want to talk now a little bit about the actual making and marketing and releasing and selling of this thing, because, you know, we live in a world in which the old idea of what you can make how movies can be made and how they can be sold theoretically should have been shattered. The internet allows for all sorts of expectations to be different and for all sorts of stuff. And yet everything still feels kind of the same. It still feels like you got your 90-minute documentaries, you got your 2-hour movies, you got your 10-episode TV shows. And there is still like kind of a weird non-space for movies like this, which are, again, this is immensely entertaining. It's an immensely amusing 18-minute short documentary. I really hope folks go to trolldoc.com and check it out. But when you were looking, when you were trying to figure out what to do with this, what was your thought process like?
Well, when I like thought about doing it, the entire time I was like, this cannot be a feature no matter what. There's no chance. I've seen, I'm a big documentary fan. I've seen a million of them. And there is nothing quite worse than a documentary that should have been 25 minutes. That's an hour and a half. And I never wanted to, nor did I have like to make an hour and a half documentary about this, you'd have to just go in a million different ways. So I knew it was going to be a short. And because of the short, it immediately became clear to me that I was like, okay, what we should do is try to do festivals as much as possible and just see where that ends up. So I remember reaching around and talking to a whole bunch of people. And as I was talking to a whole bunch of people, I talked to the old president of MTV, who is a bigwig, Tony DeSanto. And he was a lovely guy, chatted with me, and he was like, hey, this actually sounds like it would be a television idea, like for a TV show. And I was like, abso-fucking-lutely, you're right. He's like, do you have a deck? And I was like, don't know what that is, but I'm about to Google it right now while we're all on the phone. Give me a week and wear tight shoes because I'm going to knock your socks off. So I sent him a deck. He loves it. He sends me the nicest email I've ever seen in my entire life. It just says, wow. And he's like, yeah, if I was buying stuff, I'd buy it in the room. I love this. We'll get into work. And so for the next 2 years, I was just trying to sell this idea as a television show. And it was, other than it being purchased, remarkably successful for like just a lark kind of thing like this, like We got an Emmy-winning showrunner attached, which was lovely, of the show True Life. Have you ever seen True Life on MTV?
Sure.
I would say True Life is like maybe top five most influential television shows of me just like learning about life, you know, just being able to like see other people's problems. And then we needed to attach talent. And my favorite musical artist, primarily because other musical artists have grown out of favor as years have gone on, signed on, T-Pain. I don't know if you know who T-Pain is, but he's
sure,
unbelievably talented and probably one of the sneakiest, funniest people on planet Earth. Like truly, truly hilarious. And so we went around for a while and pitched it to all the big streamers and stuff. And T-Pain would show up in like armor gear as a goof. Like he'd have a red Solo cup and be completely dressed as a knight and just be like pitching and weaving. And after a long time, because of whatever the market or, you know, whatever, everybody passed. And I was like, well, what am I going to do with this? I'm obviously have to make something out of it. And so I just decided to make a short documentary and see how I could do on film festivals. And it became one of those weird things where I was like, I need to do this and I don't want to spend an inordinate amount of money on it. So I'm just going to do everything myself.
I want to go backwards because the idea of this being a TV show is kind of interesting. What would that have looked like? I mean, are we talking about like a True Life style thing, or are we talking about like a 10 episode, 30 minute per episode sitcom sort of thing? What was that? What did that look like?
It looked very cool. I liked the idea of it a lot, but it was going to be an anthology. And if you watch the doc, everything, the visual language of it is all 1999, on digital 1999. What the idea was going to be is like the Hank idea that I explained at the beginning, it was going to be going to different times in whatever. So it'd be 1998, it would be Windows 95-ish looking, and then that, and then there was going to be another one in 2003-ish, and that would be Apple, and then 2007 be those like Rolling Hills, Microsoft background, and like kind of have all those different kind of things be the vessel to tell different stories about trolling and trolling campaigns and stuff like, you know, the Streisand effect and whatever. And I really like that idea, but anthologies have no market. And everybody, at least at that time, you know, it's always a rolling thing. Maybe now, you know, one person makes Tiger King, that's like an anthology, and everybody's like, now we need anthologies. Anthology is very important. But at the time, nobody was really interested in that. And it was very interesting to like try to sell a television show where you find that out, and then it immediately, everything contorts to whatever the bigwigs say, whatever the buyers are saying. The buyer's like, you know what? We really want it to be nature. It's like, no, this is not internet anymore. It's all about nature. I promise. It's going to be about trolls in nature. Like the capitulating immediately was very, very illuminating to me.
What would some of the other subjects have been here? Because I look as a connoisseur of internet trolling, as a person who is currently living in what feels like some sort of trolling simulation, it's the only way I can describe the Donald Trump effect of the last 10 years or so. What would some of the other instances have been that you guys were going to cover?
Well, okay, so it was going to be Hank. It was going to be TRL. I still might do this. So if any of your listeners decide to steal it, I'm going to be upset. But three was going to be.
We have listeners out there who can green light things like this. So if you're a green, if you got your finger on the green light right now, listen to Yorgo.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I don't want to. I love everybody out there. Everybody's great.
Everybody's your daughter, awesome. That's fine. You know? Okay.
No, I believe that that's true. I also believe that, whatever. It's showbiz.
Okay.
Number three was going to be the Streisand effect and the history of the Streisand effect explained in detail and how it's been used since, in a way, incorporating like... do you know the history of the Streisand effect? Do you know why it happened?
Sure. I do. I am well aware of Barbara Streisand. This was the Jonah Goldberg thing, right?
I don't know if it was
a different thing.
No, it's about her house being photographed.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Her house gets photographed by somebody who's like flying a drone or whatever, and he takes like four pictures or whatever and uploads it. She gets really mad, hires lawyers who like cost lots of money. And at the time when this like broke, like something like 12 or whatever people had actually seen it. And then once she did actually make this lawsuit, just ballooned to hundreds of thousands of people seeing the thing, which there the Streisand effect was born. But it was born, some guy, a reporter, I forget his name right now, coined the term. Then the fourth thing was going to be a history of Rickrolling and the origins of Rickrolling. Which is a bait and switch troll, a specific kind of troll where you click on a link, which actually happens in the doc, where you click on a link and then you find out that there's a large man hanging off of a bed naked. do you remember that from coronavirus when he was like, "Yo, the first case of coronavirus has landed in your town," and you click it and be that large black man sitting on the
bed? I don't remember that. That doesn't. You don't remember that? I never clicked on that, but that sounds like something that would happen on the internet.
No, but yeah. Anyway, it was. It's. I'm surprised you haven't seen that, or you're lying. But the history of Rickrolling is very, very fascinating because it started. I contend, and I wanted to do research about this. I contend it kind of started with "It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia," because they did "Never Gonna Give You Up" as an episode. And it was kind of like one of those weird episodes where Dennis is like dancing and doing weird stuff and just seeming like he's like kind of in this drug stupor. And from that, it became kind of popular because Always Sunny was kind of a popular culty kind of show. And then a dude called up like a high school football after show and just played the song. And then that became a viral thing. And there was already like a function of duck rolling, where if you clicked on a link, it would go to a picture of a duck on wheels in the 4chan community. And so those two things combined, and now Rick Astley is a household name. And then the fifth thing was going to be all politics, which was going to be interesting because the petition, the We the People petition thing during Obama's term, I don't know if you remember that. But they would have, if you got 100,000 signatures, the White House will be forced to respond to whatever you do. Mm-hmm. And so people did a million different things, the most popular of which was the for America to build a Death Star as our defense.
I remember that.
Yes. Yeah. And then the White House responded very cheekily, which is very funny. And also there was a troll that they wanted to get the road that Trump Tower is on to be named Barack Obama Boulevard. But what I found out is that is illegal in New York because to have a street named after you in New York, you have to be deceased.
Interesting.
I did not know that. Yeah. Hmm. And then the last one was going to be sports. And the sports one, which I have actually tried to pitch as a full-length doc and I think is really, really, really good, is the John Scott All-Star story, where John Scott, who is this big lumbering goon, who's like on his way out of the league. There's this podcast, very popular hockey podcast, sees that they're changing the rules to the NHL All-Star game again to make it more exciting again. And they're very frustrated. And since it's all about agility, they're like, who's the biggest guy that we could put in there that nobody would like? And they pick John Scott. And from there, it just becomes this huge issue to the point where he gets traded and sent down to the minors to try to negate this. And at the end of the day, he just got, and it was really weird because NHL was like putting a lot of pressure, but it didn't seem like they were like, no. And at the end, it was like one of the most beautiful stories because he's like, no, I wear the uniform. If they vote for me, I get to play. Stop making me seem like I'm some weirdo. And he goes there. And he dominates, he scores the game-winning goal, and he wins MVP, which means he got voted in by people because he wasn't an option. They just went hashtag vote Scott for MVP. And he won because he won the All-Star game, he won like $100,000. And then he also won a Honda Pilot. Dang. And I think he played like maybe 5 minutes the rest of his career and just sailed off into the sunset. It's like really...
In his Honda Pilot.
Yeah, like truly a beautiful story. And I think Mitch Albom was writing the story. And I don't know what happened to that. But that is like, it was like a Disney movie. It was really, really beautiful. And yeah, those were going to be the six. And there's another one that I really like, but it's so, did you ever hear about the, now we're just telling tales. Do you remember the Dan Savage, Rick Santorum thing?
Sure, sure.
That I really wanted. I think that's one that's really untapped that I would really like, where Dan Savage sees an AP interview where Rick Santorum's like, hey, listen, we can't be letting gays get married. If gays get married, what's going to happen? Man on man, then man on dog, who knows? And Dan Savage, who was an early adopter to, he's a columnist and radio show host in Seattle, was like, well, Rick Santorum, if you think that gay means that I'm going to fuck a dog, then guess what? Santorum is going to mean this. And he crowdsources what Santorum should be defined. And I've seen all of the lists and they were all very funny. But he decides that Santorum, the new definition will be the frothy discharge of semen, I'm sorry if it's too much, and fecal matter after anal sex.
Well, I was going to say, this episode would very, you would have to do this on like HBO After Dark or something.
Yeah, but what sucks is it's just that's dirty. That's the only thing that's dirty is the actual thing. Everything else is really interesting because he decides they do what it's called a Google bomb, which was very popular back then. Like if you looked up in like 2004, like I think it was like Coward, George W. Bush would be the first thing. Like you could just run the algorithm. And so they did that over and over and over again, where if you did this, it would Rick Santorum, you'd get this. And Santorum runs for president in 2012 and he like wins Iowa or whatever. And everybody Googles his name and then bada bing, bada boom, Santorum means this grisly definition. That I'm sure he wouldn't have liked. And it really, it's a weird hidden story of LGBT triumph, you know?
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
No, I mean, I think that would be a great anthology series. I don't understand why it's the sort of thing that feels like, what was that? The History of Cursing. Remember that show? Like totally.
I do. Was it the History of Cursing or the Attack of Hollywood Cliches?
No, it was the one where Nick Cage is talking about curse words. You know, do you remember? I'm gonna have to look this up.
No, there's one that's good, and then there's one that's bad, and I'm trying to think of which one it was because I think History of Cursing might have been Nick Cage.
And History of Swear Words. History of Swear Words.
History of Swear Words. Yeah.
Anyway,
I think we were pitching while that was going on. So maybe the lack of success for that made of like, if it would have really popped, then everything would have been different. Cause that's how all this stuff works. You know, like, it's like, we're about to see a massive tidal wave towards vertical storytelling, which should be very fascinating that I'm just not going to participate in. I don't know. It's wild. I really wish that there would be more anthology. Cause I loved like one of my favorite things that I like really hold, like I cherish and I watch all the time is I love the 80s and I love the 90s and all those VH1 things. And those are essentially anthologies, right?
Right.
Like, And I just wish that there was a little bit more of that and there's not an appetite to green light that.
Yeah. Those were also perfect, just kind of time filler things that you could throw on MTV at any or VH1 at any given time. And just, you know, dip in for 15 minutes, leave with commercial break, whatever.
It was completely frivolous, but also it was before Wikipedia, the best pop culture encyclopedia you had. You know, you could have Donald Logue talking about Trapper Keepers or whatever. You know, you could have Michael Ian Black talking about Sour Patch Kids Cabbage Patch Kids. And it was you look back and it's like, Chris Pratt's in this? Like what? Like Beyonce's talking about what? The Maroon 5? Like there's like huge stars that they got for that. And now there's like a really Why do you think there's no talking head shows like that? That used to be like Money in the Bank, where like Spike TV would be like the 50 craziest crash videos.
Well,
that's,
I think I have a very we're getting far afield here, but I actually have a very, very specific and succinct reason for this, which is that people don't channel surf anymore. You don't, that's the short sort of show that you stop because you see somebody you recognize. You're like, oh, what are they talking about? Oh, this is fun. I'm going to sit here and watch this for 20 or 30 minutes. People don't people don't consume television that way anymore. They go to the Netflix app and they're like, okay, what tile am I going to click on? Or they go to, you know, HBO Max or whatever. And it's just that sort of show only works very specifically in a channel surfing context. And that form of TV viewing is dead.
I think I can bring this back to my thing is that what you're describing is the boob tube, not necessarily television as we consider it now, just the old boob tube. You're blipping around, just trying to find something. You're like, hey, Judge Judy, she looks mean. Let's do that for a second. And that is just what social media and TikTok is. It's just the boob tube now, where you're just like, all right, mindlessly just doing this and who cares? And there's probably, you know, Jenny and Georgia on in the background, but you're just paying attention to somebody putting rubber bands around a watermelon or whatever until it explodes. And
the difference, I mean, the big difference is that it's the, instead of you flipping through the channels trying to find something you want, it's the algorithm sending you things and trying to figure out what you like and then doubling down on it, which is why, like, I had to turn off all of my algorithmic feeds because I would linger on like car chase videos for 2 extra seconds. And then my entire feed would just be car chase videos for a week afterwards. And it would drive me crazy. And or fight videos. Fight videos are a plague. Cause I will stop on them. I will stop on them for like 10 seconds and be like, what's going on here? Oh, it's another fight video. But then the algorithm's like, oh, you watched this for 10 seconds. That means I bet you would watch it for 30 seconds. Yeah, and I get 1,000 of them.
It is really like if you were blipping through the channels and you were like going to channel 44, which is VH1, but now it's actually whatever, just the last channel that you were watching, just in a different version. I don't like it at all. I think it's very miserable. And it's one of the things that I'm really, really trying to not do with this doc is just to contentize it. Like I was an old school analog content creator. I was a newspaper reporter for a long time. And I know how that kind of like gristling the mill is and all that. And I don't know. I just don't want it to be like that. I don't want it to be considered in that kind of same thing. And I don't know how
let's talk about the distribution of this movie. So again, if you go to trolldoc.com, you can watch it there. It is available for purchase on YouTube. Is that right? Is that
you can get it on YouTube. It's not going to be available for purchase. You can just watch it on YouTube. It's going to be hosted on trolldoc.com embedded through a YouTube video. But I'm telling people to go to the website specifically because if you watch it on the website, there is no view counter. And so if I send people over to YouTube and there's like this big excitement of people wanting to watch it and there's only like 114 views or whatever, they're one of the first people and it's that, then people will think it's bad because that is the economy of media that we work in, is that if there's not that many views, then it's bad. So if I can eliminate that as long as humanly possible and just have people go to my website, then I think we might have a little bit of a better chance. And I don't know. That's just kind of like it's weird that that's how it works, but that's how it works. And hopefully I think that the people will like it and it's shareable. It's one of those kind of things like, hey, did you hear about this kind of things? It's not like a typical short where it's not very artsy fartsy.
No, it does. It did remind me. It's funny that you mentioned the I love the 80s, I love the 90s style shows. There is definitely an element of that here with the talking head format, but also the kind of aesthetics of it and the trying to recall that time in the viewer as they're watching it, which again, it's deeply successful both as nostalgia and as just kind of an interesting story that that folks don't necessarily know about.
Yeah, and that was because I realized like the best move was to do like festivals, and like we did it really well with festivals. We got to do Comic-Con. That was really cool. Because I was like the only person that worked on it, I had to bring my whole family up for whatever. And they kind of help, but not really. And then I got to do Hot Docs, which is the biggest in like North America, and then did Doc NYC, like really, really awesome, prestigious festivals. And I realized that like all of the short documentaries have some kind of like emotional pull that makes people remember them. And I did not have that, nor did I want to contrive one of those, you know, where it's like, oh, this means blah, 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 and that's why we have blah, blah. I didn't want to do any of that. I wanted it to, like, the emotional thing that makes it resonate with you is the accurate accuracy of the time and the verisimilitude of what you're dealing with. And that's the one thing that I take the most pride in. And when I see other folks try to mimic that time, it's never been like exactly accurate. And I spent so much time on trying to make it exactly how it was supposed to be. And I think it works out.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was pretty much everything I wanted to ask. What should folks know about either your documentary or what you're doing next, or, you know, whatever that we did not discuss here that folks should know about?
They should know that they should check it out at trolldoc.com, and that if you have any questions or want to chat about it, this was a large part of my life for a long time. So if you have any questions, just reach out to me. That'd be great. I'm very excited to see how it goes, because like I haven't really received very much criticism, and so now that it's going to go out into the public, I know that that's coming, and I'm excited to see how I handle it, because the movie
Reddit haters to find it. You want the haters to sink their teeth into it.
I mean, I just know that's coming, so I'm excited to see how I deal with it. Honestly, what I wanted to do is I wish that there was a way that I could have this kind of be a similar, like have it mirror what happened where people were trying to subvert the voting of TRL and have the exact same thing happen with this documentary to be nominated for an Oscar. That would be ideal. I would love for that. But that, so like if there's like, hey, let's have this massive push to have this thing about joking about institutions. Let's make this thing now joke about institution. That would be very cool. I don't know how to make that happen, especially having to make that happen. And when you want it to happen is not how the internet works, you know?
Right. So you want an ironic Oscar.
100%. I want an ironic nod. I'd take an ironic nod any day. I want to recommend a couple short movies, because there's just nobody knows anything about shorts, you know, like it just doesn't happen. The two best things I saw on the festival circuit were both documentary shorts, and they were absolutely incredible. There's a couple that I saw that I really, really liked, but aren't available online. One Sundance nonfiction short, it was called Bob's Funeral, and it is a wallop. It is incredible. It's just a guy telling a story about his father, and it's kind of done in this, like, he does a little bit of animation that's a little bit like Gothic South Park, which is just incredible. And I cried for like 15 minutes. Absolutely incredible. Another one, which was nominated for best documentary short last year and was picked up by The New Yorker, was called Incident. Did you see Incident?
Nope.
It's I think it's like 20 minutes or so of just real time footage from like body cams and street cams after a shooting that occurred in broad daylight in Chicago, and just chronicling what happens with all of the personnel involved. And it's very fascinating, and it is just straight up a document. There's no like trying to lean on a scale or anything, which I thought was great. And then the best thing that I've seen at least this year is a movie called Les Bêtes, which is a animated short in black and white, and it's available on Vimeo, and it's just absolutely incredible. Like, it's silent. Nobody says anything. It's just this dude who's been doing stop motion since, you know, the Reagan administration or whatever, and he didn't have anything to do during COVID. So he's like, hey, let me bring out all my little models. And he creates, I'm telling you, it's the best. Les Bêtes, B-E-T-E-S.
How do you spell that?
Lesbetes. It was, I think, the only American film to make Annecy, which Annecy is like the Sundance of animated movies.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the jury of American Documentary and Animation Film Festival, and we awarded it. We like had it qualify for the Oscars, and it's just been incredible, the run that it's been on. And it's really, really, I mean, it's very good. I like it a whole bunch. It's impossible to describe. It's just the best. And the okay. score.
What were those three again? Let's just give them one after the other.
Bob's Funeral. That's available, I think, on Mubi. Incident, which I believe is available. It's through The New Yorker, and I believe it is available on YouTube. And on Vimeo, Laybets, animated short, black and white. There's no dialogue, and I swear it's really good. Not the best sell, but it just rocks. It's the best. And yeah, I don't know. I wish what you were getting at earlier is very interesting to me, because it's like, how do you make this turn when there's no rules? It's not like you need a commercial, you know, there's no rules for how long stuff needs to be. And honestly, I think people are getting it wrong. I think movies are too long generally. So like the fact that you can make like a full meal and have it be 17, 18 minutes, like when is there a model for that is what I'm excited to see. Like, when is there a model where you can just make a thing that's supposed to be good instead of having everything else around it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the eternal struggle of the entertainment industry, right? The being good part is kind of optional. Being good doesn't matter. It's being popular and being saleable that matters, which is, you know, that's kind of an eternal struggle.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so funny because whenever something's good, you just always take the wrong things out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like because Sinners was so good, they're going to be like, hey, we need another romantic vampire movie with black people instead of being like, you know, no, Ryan Coogler's the best. You know, like, I think that there's going to it just feels like Hollywood always kind of makes that decision. But then they strike oil, and there's some really, really interesting yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. Just watch the movie. I hope it does very well, and I hope the quality is not optional with it.
Yeah. Again, go to trolldoc.com. You can watch it there. There will be no counter. You can just enjoy it, and you should enjoy it because, again, it's 31. 30, if you're between the age of 31 and 43, this is very much it's right in that sweet spot for you. So
yeah, it was a ubiquitous experience. We all had not just TRL, but like the internet of that time. And I'm excited for a lot of people to see it. It's out now.
Yeah. Yorgo, thanks for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Also, my name, before we're done, can I just say, I really appreciate the criticism that you offer up and that you're very good. And I think that a lot of critics now, besides, like, I'm talking like professional critics, not like some person on TikTok, do a very poor job of contextualizing movies that aren't IP and that aren't awards driven movies. And I think you do a tremendous job of taking a movie as it is and actually give a shit about proper film criticism. And for that, I thank you very much.
Too much puffery.
Sentiment all the same. If you took that well, isn't that the line? It's like, never trust a man who can take a compliment well.
It makes me uncomfortable. I don't like it when people say nice things. because my name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.